When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Ball game over. American League Championship Series over. Yankees win. The Yankees win!
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, 305, McMonagle here with you, 877-337-6666. We're breaking down this brutal loss from the New York Knicks as they lose game five in gut-wrenching fashion, blow a six-point lead with 28.9 seconds in the game, have a miserable overtime performance from Jalen Brunson, who decided to try and just take over the game. Early on, you thought maybe it was going to work, even if you didn't like it, which I didn't. But he scores the first 5 points overtime, but then takes bad shots, doesn't flow inside the offense, throws the ball away, makes a bad pass to Hart, all these things. But what we've talked about there before the end of the hour there, and what a couple people have focused on, is not playing Achiuwa in this game. And I do just want to say, there is a difference in argument about never going to Achiuwa, and then what happened in the final moments of this game or in regulation. And a previous caller talked about the end one, the four-point play, which is the biggest, without question, at least in my, I don't know how you argue it. There's a lot of different things that need to happen, but ultimately, the biggest play is the four-point play from Maxi. And I'm sorry, you can argue everything falls at the feet of the head coach. This is a dumb play by Mitchell Robinson. Plain and simple. He made a mistake. It happens. I'm not going to, you know, take him off the floor for it or not play him again in games. Like, it's just what it is. But he made a mistake and he left his feet. And the idea that you have a problem with Mitch being on the floor, I didn't hear it once during the broadcast. Not one person said, why is Mitchell Robinson out there? You're going to have to defend the perimeter. And that's not what he's... That's not a situation he's used to. No, he's never dealt with a pick and roll before. He's never ever had to come off a screen and guard a guard before. Never in his life. It's very unique to him. But if you look at the play, right, and the last caller suggested throwing a immediate double team on off Maxi off the inbound. Maxi is standing on the opposite free throw line. They're inbounding the ball from their half court. The inbounder throws it all the way down to the other side. Maxi catches it while running up. He runs into the screen, and then Mitchell Robinson picks him up. Mitchell Robinson is on Embiid. Now, you want to say you know for a fact that the only play they're going to run is to have him get a three-pointer or whatever? They're up 6 points. I'm not concerned about anything. Let them take their three. I'm not going to make it easy for them necessarily, but let them take their three. And by the way, if you watch it, Mitchell Robinson is guarding him and is in his face. He leaves his feet and makes it for an easy foul where he's able to jump into him and make the foul call. You can't double him off the screen. What do you throw two defenders at him on the other side of the court and leave someone wide open for a quick two? The quick two is almost as dangerous as the quick three. Like, it's just you're playing it all the same, up six, knowing you're going to go to the foul line. Like, yeah, of course the three hurts you more, but it's just you're playing anything other than the four-point play changes the dynamic. The three-point play, even one foul shot, puts you up 4 points. All you can, the only thing you can't do is foul. Mitchell Robinson being put in that position is not something he's never been in. I'm watching the play right now. The inbound goes all the way to the other side of the court, off the screen, the pick and roll. Mitchell Robinson leaves his feet. He's right there to defend him. He's going to make Maxi drive around him because he's standing right there. Maxi is about to take a three-point shot on the run with Mitchell Robinson, 7 feet tall, hands in the air, tough look in front of his face. That's a three-pointer I'm completely comfortable giving up in that moment. Off the screen, running to his left, on the run, taking a three-pointer with Mitchell Robinson in his face. That is a possession and a three-point opportunity that I am perfectly fine with giving up 25 seconds with a six-point lead. More than happy to have that be the outcome. He leaves his feet. That's the problem. Once you leave your feet, you give him the opportunity to lean into you. And then Mitch, realizing he's left his feet and that the shot hasn't gone up, turns his body and moves to the right of Maxey, giving him an easy, clear lane to the basket and an opportunity to nudge him to his right as he goes up. It's the worst defensive play you can make on that play. That's on Mitchell Robinson, who's in there for his defense and his rebounding. You want to go back now and tell me it's on the coach for putting him in that position? I don't buy that for a second. He can't leave his feet, plain and simple. If he doesn't leave his feet, that is a possession I am comfortable with. I am happy with. If Maxey hits the shot, Maxey hits the shot. I'm up 3 points. I'm going to inbound the ball, go to the foul line, and I'm one foul shot away from being up more than one possession. He left his feet and changed the dynamic of the game. He's in there for his rebounding. He's in there to guard Embiid, who you might tell me, oh, Embiid's worthless in that spot. Okay, Embiid is their MVP. There's no chance he touches the ball. There's no chance he says, let me go to the basket and see if I can get fouled and have a three-point play. There's no reason. You don't have to put a defender. I mean, I'm playing my game. That's how they played the entire game. If he doesn't leave his feet, that I am more than happy with the outcome of that possession. All he has to do is not leave his feet and not be fooled on a pump fake. If he stands there, Maxey picks up his dribble and is going far. It's just, I'm more than comfortable with that shot. He stops. He picks up his dribble. He might not even shoot it. They might have that. If you watch the replay, he might not even shoot it if Mitchell Robinson doesn't go up in the air. They might have stopped him and forced him to make the pass the last caller wanted him to make. Maxey picks up his dribble, and he might not even shoot it because Mitchell Robinson is in his face. He might look to pass that ball. But then he sees Mitchell Robinson leave the ground. He bumps into him and figures at the worst, I'm getting three foul shots. I'm sorry. That is not on Tibbs. It is not. Angelo in Westchester. What's up, Angelo?
Hey, what's going on? I get what you're saying, but in reality, it is on Tibbs because where'd Mitch go to college? Nowhere. That's the answer. He went nowhere. He didn't.
That's the end of this conversation. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? He didn't go to college? Are you saying he's not bright? Like, I don't know. What are we talking about? He's been there. This is a second round pick who's turned himself into one hell of a defensive and rebounding player, who was great for them to start the year, who's been their best defensive player, who shut Embiid down in game two, who's been great playing defense against them, and in that moment does everything right up until the point of leaving his feet. Should Mitchell Robinson not be on the floor in a playoff game because he didn't go to college? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I mean, did he have nothing to do with the other victories? Like, what are we talking about? He was an impactful player for them, 1 and 2. He's been good for them defensively. He played Embiid much better than Hartenstein did in game one and in game two. Oh, my God. Sorry, I typically let guys have multiple points. You can't say something dumb like that with your first point and then think you're going to get another one.
Isn't there the list of NBA players who didn't go to college, famously terrible.
No, I know.
Kobe Bryant,
LeBron James, Kevin Garnett. Yeah, Just terrible. And losing players, too, with no instinct or
LeBron
intelligence
James,
about
like these
the game.
Guys just stink. They, you know, they don't have high basketball IQs.
Nope. Terrible. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. He left his feet. He made a mistake. Mitch has been great. He made a huge mistake, though. I mean, there is he did make a huge mistake. You cannot leave your feet and allow that foul. But I'm not killing Thibs for leaving him on the floor. I'm not. And if you watch it again, especially to the last caller. Watch it again. Not this last caller, but the guy who made the argument prior to the top of the hour. Watch it again. He has the play defended. Maxey picks up his dribble. If Mitch doesn't leave his feet, he might pass the ball and not shoot it. They've got the play defended. We'll give him another try. Nick, you there?
Hello?
Yeah, okay. You gotta. Yep, I hear you now, but you gotta be careful, okay? But
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry, buddy. I cut myself off. These guys sound foolish saying this. It has nothing to do with Tibbs. The fact that he put a 7-footer in his presence alone when switching to the screen to Maxey, you're still shooting over a 7-footer.
No doubt.
That shot needs to be amazing. That shot needs to be absolutely amazing.
That's a very difficult shot to shoot over, Mitch. Yep.
Yes, there is absolutely no reason to jump whatsoever. That free throw alone was the difference between Josh Hart's free throw missing. You give up that three-pointer. You give up everything you're saying was 100% right. The whole college thing and everything they're talking about.
Well,
no, that was the difference right there.
Yeah, the 100%. The difference is the 4 points as opposed to the 3 points.
Against Embiid. 100%. He played phenomenal against Embiid. Played absolutely phenomenal against Embiid all day.
Mm-hmm.
You're a 7-footer against a 6'2", 6'1 guard. There is absolutely no reason whatsoever to jump in that situation at all.
None.
I understand you're trying to make a play, but your height alone is a presence.
No, and if you want 100%.
I was calling to talk about your point. You said every point exactly right. There is absolutely no reason. He played phenomenal defense. He was shutting down Embiid all game. And there was no reason. It's just a simple mistake. Has nothing to do with Tibbs. Has nothing to do with the coaching or anything. It's just a poor play in that situation.
No,
simple as
it.
That. A 7-footer on a 6'2 guard, your presence alone is enough. The angles that Maxey shoots at, he's going to take those shots regardless.
Yep.
You give up the three.
That's it.
The difference between the free throw that Hart missed and the extra point you gave them. Even if you know what, you jumped, I'm sorry to say, foul him hard.
I agree.
Don't let him dip that shot up.
No, 100%. Once
don't
you
let him
feel,
dip that.
You cannot, you're 100% right. One, you can't leave your feet. Two, if you do, and, you know, you can't let him get the shot off. You can't turn. He turns once he knows he's going to go up because he doesn't want to hit him, because he obviously doesn't want to foul him. He opens, he turns, steps away, and gives him the lane and gives the hands up like, ref, I'm not doing anything, ref, I'm not doing anything. Instead, he left his feet, allowed the contact. Once you allow that contact, you have to, I don't care what you do, you have to make sure he doesn't get off that shot. That's the problem. Mitch made a mistake. It's not about coaching, and there is no reason to take him off the floor. And if he doesn't leave his feet, he's got the play defended. Got the play defended. Maxey picks up his dribble. That's not an open shot. They didn't get burned. They didn't put him in a position he's uncomfortable, unfamiliar with. He's unfamiliar playing. That's their offense. Embiid runs the pick and roll with Maxey. They do it all the time. Mitchell Robinson hasn't had to pick up Maxey at any point in this series. This is completely foreign to him. If only he went to college, he would have been able to been more familiar with the pick and roll. Come on. Come on now. There's plenty of things to be mad about. The problem on that play is Mitchell Robinson, not the coach, not leaving him out there, not the position he was. Nothing other than he left his feet, got out of the way, allowed him to create contact and have an open look. It's the worst thing he could have done. He could not have handled the situation worse. But I don't regret putting him in the situation. Tony in Lodi. What's up, Tony?
See, Mac, usually I call to break your chops about Aaron Boone, your love affair for him, but I'm calling you as a broken Knicks fan tonight.
Yeah,
man.
Tonight was rough.
Listen, a couple things. I agree with you on Mitchell Robinson. It's not on Tibbs. Even Mitchell Robinson, to his credit, owned it afterward.
Of course.
He said he screwed up, got to be better next game. But I'm really concerned about the fatigue of this team. Do I think ultimately we're going to beat the 76ers? I do. I'm not worried about that. But going down the stretch here, I mean, Jalen Brunson just, you know, he reminded me of Carmelo down the stretch there, the ISO. It seems like he doesn't trust anybody on the team, and he made a few mistakes we don't normally see. Remember when they stripped Embiid? They're running the other way, 3-on-2, and he gives the ball to Josh Hart to go right at Embiid. I mean, C-Mac, that's a huge swing. Earlier on, Josh Hart turns the ball over. It was a 3-on-1. He throws it 5 feet behind OG. Mm-hmm. Just way too many points given up. And, I've been on Tibbs a lot this year with running these players into the ground. But this also goes to the front office. I mean, they just didn't do enough at the trade deadline. Alec Burks is ineffective. Boyan, you can't, foresee injuries, but this team is just so thin.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. And he did.
I just don't see them making a deep run. That's,
well, I don't know. I think as much as everything you just said is accurate, on some level, they can go beat whoever's next. They can go beat the Indiana Pacers if that's what it comes to. And I think it'll be without. I mean, they're going to go back to Indiana. I would think they're going to win that game, but who knows? But I still think they're capable. I don't think it's the fatigue necessarily, because I think the Sixers are just as fatigued. And I know you're talking about moving on with them. They play a lot of minutes, but they've looked like the better conditioned team. Like, that's what bothers me about last night a lot, is that all the things that we've seen go the Knicks' way went the Sixers' way last night. And I don't like scripts flipping mid-series. Like,
Last night was the night. I mean, Embiid, it was there for the taking. 9 turnovers from him alone. Mm-hmm. Last night was the night to close this out. Now you gave them a little juice. He challenged his fans. That place is going to be all pumped up. But quick question for you, C-Mac, because I noticed it last game when Hartenstein inexplicably had 5 fouls in the third quarter alone. Besides Precious, did you notice they put OG on Embiid for a little while? It seemed like Joel Embiid, because of his lack of mobility, is struggling with the smaller matchup. So I was curious if you think that's an option they should kind of do a Precious, switch OG on him. I was curious.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was reading something about Mitchell Robinson going to college. I apologize. One more time. Ask me the question.
So last game, Hartenstein inexplicably had those five fouls,
right?
In the third quarter alone. So I don't know if you noticed, it wasn't just Precious, but they started putting OG on him as well. So due to his lack of mobility, I was curious your thoughts. I mean, is that something they should explore here and exploit maybe over the next game?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it depends on how he looks. I got to be totally honest with you. They didn't need to do that in this game because he wasn't beating them offensively. Like, he really wasn't a threat. He was staying mainly on the perimeter. He was looking, I think even Clyde said it on the broadcast. Breen goes, he's pretty much been a perimeter offensive player in this game. Clyde says, well, that's because it's the only place he can get open. And because they might leave him some space with a long three. Like, that's it. So he was so hot. Now, listen, if you get into this game and he is attacking and creating the same kind of, if he's getting fouls on Hartenstein, if he's getting to the basket, if he looks much more like the player of game 3 than he does the player of game 5, then, yeah, I'm open to it, because I do think the more bodies you throw at him, the more different looks you give to him. And I thought, you're right, Precious, who had 2 blocks against him in game 4, including that 3-pointer right before the shot clock wore out at the end of that game, he was great. It was a dynamic duo after having to adjust. But they also, here's the thing, Mitchell Robinson has done a really nice job, and that was a force with Hartenstein getting into foul trouble and not having Mitchell Robinson available in the game. If Mitchell Robinson is available in the game, I think that's the easier move, to just put Mitchell Robinson on him. And that's what you saw in this game, and he scored 19 points. He wasn't really a threat offensively. So it depends. It depends on the flow of the game. I think that's an option. It's something Tibbs has in his back pocket. If he wants to do that OG Anunoby and Achiuwa kind of double team or throwing the different players at him, if Mitchell Robinson either goes down, you know, because his ankle's bothering him, or Hartenstein's ineffective, or they want to go small on some level, or, you know, it's open to him because it did work. I don't think, and we're clearly seeing, because it wasn't in this game, despite it working well in game four, he still went back to just, I have Mitchell Robinson, now I'm going to put Mitchell Robinson on him. And it worked. So, I mean, I'm not, it depends on how Embiid looks. That's what it's going to come down to. How does Embiid look? Because in this game, he looked really bad. He looked like he couldn't move. This was by far the worst we've seen him, by far. And he still played a lot of minutes. So I'd be, you know, I'm hoping that they get the same version of him in this game coming up on Thursday night at 9 o'clock, by the way. Make sure everybody's aware of that, 9 o'clock. But, you know, Embiid played 48 minutes in this game. And he was hobbled. And I know he got the triple-double, but as people have pointed out, he almost got a quadruple-double because he had 9 turnovers. He was sloppy with the ball. He couldn't back in or play anywhere near the basket. He was strictly a perimeter. And he was strictly a perimeter player working on the pick and roll and making sure Maxey got the ball. That was his role in that game last night. He came up with a big block in overtime. He can pick and choose what he can try and do the most of his physical ability, but it's a struggle for him. And that's what makes last night so frustrating is, you know, he's had moments where it's looked like that, then he's looked better, then he's looked poor, then he's looked better, then he's looked bad, then he's looked better. And now I'm concerned with 2 days rest. Maybe he'll look better. It's not out the window. It's not crazy to think he will look better in game six than he did in game five. And if so, now they have a problem. This was an opportunity to win this game, win this series last night. It is a brutal loss. And there's more than just the end of the game. And I want to get into a couple of different plays in this game that I think were enormous, enormous momentum changers. One early on in the game in the second quarter and one in the fourth quarter. It's not just the end of the game. Typically, that's what we'll talk about. Those are all the, you know, the four-point play clearly is the most important thing. Maxey hitting one from half court clearly changed the game. What happened in overtime clearly decided the game. But early on, I thought there were opportunities to really put your foot on the throat of the 76ers, and two plays, one made by Philadelphia and one stupid play by the Knicks, I think changed momentum and led to this game even being in the position where the last 28 seconds killed them. 877-337-6666. McMonagle here with you on the Fan, continuing to take your Knick calls on the morning after the worst loss we've experienced since 95. I'm trying to think. I mean, it ranks right up there with the Charles Smith game. It ranks right up there with the game 6 and 7 of the NBA Finals in 94. The Ewing finger roll, the Reggie Miller game in game 1 of that series, all of it. This was an opportunity. That Garden was ready to explode and send Philadelphia home for the year. And instead, boneheaded plays, missed foul shots, and then a poorly game-planned offensive overtime leads to a game 6 back in Philadelphia Thursday night, trying to hopefully not have to come back for a game 7 in the Garden.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
It'll be a 3-2, and Clemens deals. Struck him out swinging. Number 4,000. Roger Clemens becomes the third pitcher in the history of Major League Baseball to record 4,000 strikeouts.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 334, McMonagle here with you. 877-337-6666. So I talked about, obviously, we've been talking about the end of this game and how important all the different plays were and how we can talk about it. And apparently, Mitchell Robinson, I'm getting it on Twitter, too. As, let me read the exact tweet. Just, you know, and again, it's X. Or I guess enough people have made that transition. I have not. I just call it Twitter. But it doesn't matter. C-Mac, wow. Stick to your Daniel Jones talk. On another day, I will. I'll continue to talk Daniel Jones. We will. Don't worry about it. You'll see. You'll all see. You've already seen. You'll see more of the same from Daniel Jones. Don't worry about it. Dragging the Giants down. Doesn't matter. That's not for today. Stick to your Daniel Jones talk. Tibbs blew this game. Can't have a big with a bad foot guarding the three. I just think that's absolute nonsense. Watch it. Watch the play. Maxie picks up his dribble. And that seems to be a big talking point here from a lot of the fans. Because it's clearly the biggest play of the game. No doubt about it. That four-point play is without question the biggest part of the biggest play in the game that changes a win to a loss. No, number uno. Numero uno. Typically people don't say number uno, they say numero uno. Numero uno. But it's a mistake by Mitchell Robinson. He has the play defended. If you look at it, I'm not sure he's going to shoot that shot until Mitchell goes up. That is, nobody said anything. Nobody was complaining. Nobody thought you had to get him off the court. It wasn't a talking point. No one even said it. I watched most of the post game. No one asked Tibbs about it. No one mentioned it in the post game. This is just, you know, I don't think it's, he has it. He made a terrible mistake. But that wasn't the only play. There's a couple of plays that I do want to point to where I thought the Knicks had an opportunity to really put their foot on the throat of the 76ers, and they blew both these plays. And this game is so important to me, and it's such a dagger that I feel like going back and taking a look at them. And the first one is in the second quarter. There's about 2 minutes left in the second quarter as they're going on that run in the second quarter, right? They get off to the poor start. Then the second quarter, they go on a run. They're playing really well offensively, right? I think McBride hit a couple of shots. And they've kind of flummoxed the 76ers offensively. They don't know what to do. They've really had a couple of their bad possessions. They've played poorly. And the Knicks have built up a 10-point lead. They've turned a 9-point deficit into a 10-point lead with 2 minutes left in that game, a 10-point lead. And I think if you want to talk about Embiid and you want to talk about the plays he made in this game and his impact on this game, and it wasn't offensively, having only scored 19 points. And I don't care so much about the triple-double. Because the most important statistic for me, because I think you can point back to this play and it changes the game for me, is he had 4 blocks in this game. And with 2 minutes left in the first half, they get another poor possession. I think it's even coming off a steal maybe, but it was a poor possession. The Garden is rocking. And I just felt like, wow, I talked about it yesterday, the idea of putting your foot on the throat of the 76ers and getting them to think this game is over. And getting them, you know, and especially the way Embiid was playing at that time and the way their offense was. Like, I thought, man, if they could just really start to jump out to a big lead here before the half, they could really send the Sixers into halftime thinking, there's nothing we can do. And they're up 10 points, and they get the ball down low. If you remember it, they get the ball down low to Hartenstein. And he goes up for a dunk to make it a 12-point game. The Garden is absolutely going nuts. There's a huge, once he gets the ball, he's kind of by himself, what looked to be by himself, right by the basket. He goes up. The Garden starts to stand up and applaud, and it's about to be a 12-point lead with 12 seconds left, emphasized by a monster jam from Hartenstein, and Embiid blocks the shot. It leads to a transition layup from Maxie. The Knicks come down, Hart misses a three, and then Batum hits a three. And what could have been a 12-point lead is now a 5-point lead. That instant right there, that moment in time, that change of 7 points from 12 points to 5 points, I thought, and then ultimately, what was it, a 6-point lead at the half? Instead of it being a big lead at the half, instead of getting that 12 points, instead of continuing on, they have that big momentum switch. They block the dunk. It leads to a layup, leads to a missed shot from the Knicks, leads to a 3-pointer from Batum, and it's a, instead of a 12-point lead, it is a 5-point lead. And instead, they go into halftime with a 6-point lead, thinking, a 6-point deficit, thinking, wow, it could have been much worse there. And they come out in the third quarter and hit shots and get the lead back almost within the first 5 minutes of the third quarter. I thought that was an enormous swing, because they were about to set the Garden off and culminating in a dunk right over Embiid to give them a 12-point lead and really feel like, man, there's nothing they can do. And it leads to a quick transition layup, a missed shot, and a 3-pointer, and suddenly a 12-point lead is a 5-point. I thought that was an enormous turning point. And then the other turning point for me was in the fourth quarter with about 5 minutes left. And this was the time where they were really sloppy with the basketball, Philadelphia. And they get a steal off Maxi. I think they're up 6 at this point. Let me go back and double check. 85-79 with 4:49 left. They get the steal from Maxi, and Josh Hart gets the ball, and you can see Anunoby running down the court, calling for the ball with a man on him. He wasn't running wide open. There's a man on him. And I remember right before he threw the pass, I said to myself, don't do it. You just got another steal. It's less than 5 minutes in the game. Slow it down. No need to push it there. No need to force something at the basket. And, of course, what does he do? He throws the ball away on a terrible pass. They get the ball back, and I believe the next possession, Maxi makes a 3-pointer and changes it to a 3-point game. They get the steal off Maxi. They have... Hart has the ball. They've got a 6-point lead with all the momentum, and instead they throw the ball right away. They throw the ball out of bounds on a pass that really, what was Anunoby going to do with it anyway? Yeah, he would have been down by the foul line with a man on him. It didn't seem worth it. And instead of even just completing the pass and see what happens, he throws it out of bounds, and they come right back with a Maxi 3-pointer. That, both of those moments. Now, I don't know what would have happened. Hartenstein has the dunk in the first one I'm talking about. I don't know what would have happened if they just pulled the ball back and run a possession. They might have missed a shot, and maybe, but I just felt like the momentum there, off that steal, they didn't hold on to it for a freaking second. They immediately threw the ball back away. And then Maxi hits the three. Those two moments for me were moments where I felt like the Knicks were about to take off in the game. And I know one's in the second quarter, but I just felt like all the momentum, and if they could have went in with a 10, 12, 14-point lead at the half, I feel like the 76ers, who I still think are the mentally weaker team. Now, Maxi changed that a little bit and put a dent into that, and that's what scares me the most. But in that moment, I felt like if they would have made a strong finish through that half, instead of letting Philadelphia get the better of the play the last minute or so and changing what could have been a big lead to a 6-point lead, was a huge turning point. And then off that steal with less than 5 minutes left in the game and a 6-point lead, not taking that ball, at least running the 24 seconds off or whatever, getting a better shot. Instead, they give it right back to Philadelphia, who hits a three and brings it back to a 3-point game. Those were two enormous momentum changers that aren't the final seconds of the game. And when you go back and you look at losses like this, right, there's more than just the finger roll Patrick Ewing missed. There's more than just all the threes that John Starks missed in the NBA Finals. There's more than just Charles Smith taking his 18 tries at making a layup under the basket. These games always have other moments that you can point to. And this is one of those games. This is one of those games, and if they lose this series, if they lose this series, and this team that we love And this team that we've already got visions of getting to the Eastern Conference Finals against this team that we debate every day whether they're good enough to win an NBA championship or not. With Jalen Brunson writing love letters to the fans as this fan base erupts outside the Garden after game one and takes it down to Philadelphia and erupts after game four. If they can't finish this series off, we will look back at this game as one of the more heartbreaking losses that we've experienced as a fan base. No joke. It's going to be up there as one of the more, because this series was over. It was over. This game was over. They were done. That shot by McBride ends the game. And instead, we're talking about a game six, Thursday night, 9 p.m., no less. That, you know, people are going to be struggling to stay awake. I know Jerry's driving in now listening to me. Anyone who works early in the morning, I mean, it's you got to stay up till God knows when. I'll be on at midnight Friday morning, so I'll be on soon after the game ends to break it all down again. But if they do lose this series, it's going to be one of those games and one of those moments and one of those sequences that we'll never forget and will always be talked about. But it's not just those final moments. It's all the different things that happen. And those were two that jumped out to me. 877-337-6666. Kevin in Bridgeport. What's up, Kev? Kevin! You there?
Hello.
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 Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing great, Kev. How are you? I need you turn down the radio or whatever you got going on.
Yeah, I had it down, but that's okay. I wasn't hearing anything through the phone.
Oh, okay. Well, you're on now, Kev. I hear you. You hear me. That's all we need to continue on with this phone call, so let's do it.
That's amazing. Thank you.
You got it.
So I don't want to beat a dead horse.
No, that's... But... What are you talking about? This is sports radio. This is what we do.
Yeah, I know, but I'm still on the tips thing, and okay. I still have to put the most of the blame on him.
Okay.
For that last 28 seconds or whatever it was.
Okay.
Mitch shouldn't have been on the court. I know you said he's there for rebounds, yada, yada.
And to defend Embiid. Who should he put out there?
But at that moment in the game, Embiid wasn't a factor, though. I mean, you got to stop Maxey.
You don't have to stop anything, quite honestly.
You do.
No, you don't. You don't have to stop anything. And who you rather put out there? Yeah. Ice cold Achiuwa, who hasn't played a second of the game?
Well, yeah,
why
not have some fresh legs out there? I mean,
let's say Mitch does get a rebound.
I understand that, but let's say Mitch does get a rebound. What are they going to do? They're going to foul Mitch. He's the last guy you want on the foul line anyway.
No benefit
of having Mitch out there at that point.
That's not true because I don't care about the foul shots. If they miss the shot, I care less about the foul shots. Up 6 points still. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm there. I got to guard Embiid.
But I got to get
the rebounds.
But you're playing against the clock. Like, at that point, you're playing against the
clock.
Exactly right. You want to kill clock.
Exactly right.
You want to kill clock, right?
Exactly right. And tell me how Mitchell Robinson hurts that.
Because Mitch Robinson, A, like I said, if he gets a rebound, he's probably not going to hit foul shots.
But you just said, the clock is the enemy, and the clock just ticked on a possession, and I'm still up 6 points. I get you.
Yeah, but at that point, I'm going with maybe a smaller lineup.
A smaller player is easier to shoot over than Mitchell Robinson. Mitchell Robinson wasn't beat off the dribble. Mitchell Robinson didn't get run around. Mitchell Robinson did not lead to a wide-open three-pointer. Mitchell Robinson led to a contested shot.
No, but Mitchell Robinson, if you pump fake 50 times, you got to get Mitchell Robinson in the air 50 times. He's been like that since day one. That was always his biggest Achilles heel, if it was part of the pun. But I would have went with a smaller lineup.
I think it's second-guessing. I understand your point. He's got to not leave his feet. He's got to be smart enough. You can't tell me, Mitchell. Hey, listen, Mitchell Robinson leaves his feet.
He's got to
not.
He's,
But he's got to be in that moment, understand it's the one thing he can't do. Like, yeah, if it happens,
no,
if it happens over the course of a game, I understand that. In that moment, that's the one thing you can't do.
Yeah, but in that moment, you're also worried about the perimeter. You don't care about a two. You don't care about a putback.
I don't care about a three. I don't care about anything other than the foul. Why a three? Puts
I do
me
because
three.
You don't want to give up. You don't want to give up 6 points real quick. So you want to do everything you can.
I understand that. If I
double team Maxi or you understand?
If I give up a three and the same and Hart makes one of two foul shots, what happens? They're up two possessions. I'm not saying I want to give up an open three. And if you watch, they didn't. But like I'm not concerned about anything because I'm still up a possession. I'm going to the foul line. And as long as I get one of the two, I'm looking at a two possession game. Like, yeah, I understand. I'd rather give up a two than a three.
But why aren't you trying to double Maxi? In other words,
how am I
going to
double Maxi? He got in.
He's the only one that's going to hurt you. He's the only one scoring.
Listen.
So your main focus should be shutting down Maxi.
There are
not
two,
worried about the pounds at that moment.
There are two.
There's no benefit of having Mitch Robinson on the floor. There's none at all.
If you watch the play, he has to shoot over the 7-foot Mitchell Robinson. He's standing there. In fact, if you watch the play, I believe Maxi is looking to pass the ball. They accomplish what you want to accomplish. All he has to do is not leave his feet. And what are you going
to
– they inbounded
the
ball.
Sure, but you didn't
ball.
Need a 7-footer to do that.
What? But he did it.
You didn't need a 7-footer to do
but
that.
But a 7-footer has a tough – oh, my God, you're not getting it. A 7-footer makes a tougher shot to get over. That's a more difficult shot. He doesn't even – it looks like he's not going to attempt the shot because he's a 7-footer until Mitchell Robinson leaves his feet. And he's all the way at the opposite foul line when the ball's inbounded. You're going to run two players and leave someone wide open? You're going to run two players to stop him getting inbounded the ball? He catches it on other side.
Yeah, but I don't believe that it was Robinson's 7-footness that affected whether or not he was going to shoot the ball. If you had two guys,
how do you get two guys
down,
on him
trying to trap
but
him?
I'm
maybe.
Saying he's getting the ball from the other side of the court. Where are you going to throw two guys on him? Wait, just two guys waiting at the half court line for him?
Yeah, almost like a zone. I mean, why not?
I guess you could do that. I mean, if you do that, you're leaving someone wide open for an inbound pass. No one else can hit a three.
Nobody else shoot, but now you're also taking three more seconds off the clock. So, I mean, like I said, you're playing against the clock right there.
I know you're playing against the clock. If you watch the possession, he did it. Like, what's so hard about this? Watch the possession. He did everything you wanted accomplished. They had accomplished. All he had to do was not jump. He switches off the screen. He picks up his dribble. He's almost looking to pass until Mitchell Robinson goes up in the air. He accomplished everything you want. They're about to waste clock. He's going to put the ball in someone else's hands, or he's going to take a quick three-pointer on the run over a 7-footer. It's the most difficult three you can paint. No other scenario is he taking a more difficult three-pointer. And you can still, if you want to double-team him, you can still double-team him with two other players besides Mitchell Robinson. Why does Mitchell Robinson being on the floor prevent you from doing the double-team you want to provide? Do that and have Mitchell Robinson on the floor for a rebound. Or make it a tougher thing to go to the basket. Like, even if you want to do the double-team, why is Mitchell Robinson preventing you from doing the double-team? This is strictly because he made the mistake. Nobody would be saying this. No one would be saying, if he just made a three-pointer, nobody would be saying, how the hell do you have Mitchell Robinson on the floor? He left his feet, and it led to the four-point play. That's the only reason this is being brought up. This is not a first guess. This is a complete second guess. Complete. Nobody is saying this prior to the basket. Nobody. Nobody. It's absolute nonsense. You've got trying to watch the play and just see who they got on the floor. They've got McBride, Hart, Anunoby, and obviously Brunson. You want the double team? Go run the double team with McBride and Anunoby. Go run it. That doesn't mean Mitchell Robinson doesn't have to be on the, off the floor if that's what you want the strategy to be. And I'm telling you, I'm watching it again. He comes, he gets the ball from the other side of the half. He has a pump fake from 4 feet behind the line, and he's about to have to either stop his momentum and take a contested shot with a 7-foot Mitchell Robinson in his face or pass the ball. They've defended it. They've been successful. They've accomplished exactly what they want to accomplish, and then Mitchell Robinson leaves his feet. That's the problem. The problem is not Mitchell Robinson being there. He did everything right. They've got the exact possession they want until he leaves his feet. If your argument is double team the inbounder, then Mitchell Robinson being on the floor doesn't stop you from doing that. Go throw a double team with McBride and Anunoby on Maxi if that's what you think is the best thing to do. You want to get on Tibbs for that? Fine. Leave out the Mitchell Robinson part because he could be on the floor and throw a double team at Maxi. And if your point is, well, I don't even care about the rebound because if he gets fouled, I don't want him at the foul line. If they miss the shot, I don't care about the – you don't get to the foul line without the rebound. And you need the – and I don't care about making it an 8-point game as much as I care about making sure they don't get a second shot at it. Don't tell me the rebound's not important or that you don't want him rebounding the ball because he's a bad foul free throw shooter. One, the entire team shot 66% in the game. And two, I'd rather make sure I secure the rebound with a 6-point lead than opposed to making a better foul shooter to make it an 8-point game. I need to secure the rebound first. Before I worry about who's taking the foul shot, I need to secure the rebound. Because what I don't want is multiple shots at it with a 6-point lead. I'll take my chances with Mitchell Robinson at the foul line if I get the free throw. I mean, if I get the rebound. The idea there's no reason to have Mitchell Robinson on the court is stupid. And nobody was saying a thing. Nobody said a thing. I watched the postgame. I don't remember that being asked. I watched a lot of the postgame. I don't remember it being a talking point. Maybe I missed it. I didn't watch the entire thing. Then I started to try and watch the baseball games as quickly as I could on DVR. But I don't. If you watch the play, tell me they didn't get what they want. Watch the play, and tell me up until the moment he bites on the pump fake and goes up in the air. From that moment, tell me they didn't get the exact thing they want. Maxi goes left. He picks up his dribble. He's about to take a very difficult 3-pointer with Mitchell Robinson in his face. I don't know what else you'd rather have. Like, honestly, of all the other guys, fine. This guy could have defended the perimeter better, blah, 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 blah. He could have done this, fine. That's not how it played out. It played out with him having to shoot over Mitchell Robinson. Who else would you rather have him shoot over? He picked up his dribble. He's 3 feet, 4 feet behind the line. If he's going to take that three, it's with Mitchell Robinson in his face. What other scenario is better than the tallest guy on the team being in his face for the 3-point shot? What's a better outcome? There isn't one. Is he slow-footed? Is there a potential for it to create a different thing? Sure, that's possible. That's not what happened. What happened was he was about to take a very difficult shot with the tallest Nick in his face, and instead, Mitchell Robinson left his feet. You want to blame Tibbs for it? Go ahead. I have no idea why.